Eric from Chicago. Just want to say congratulations on legalized weed. Your job hiring just got worse because what we're seeing here in the People's Republic of Illinois, we can't fill basic jobs that require drug tests. And guess what? Drug tests are still required for a lot of industries. So can't wait to see Minnesota get better.
Nice to hear from you, sir. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. A man who allegedly is reaping the benefits. Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning.
I saw your Facebook post, which is what prompted me to reach out to you. For those that aren't familiar with you, and I know there's very few lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, but to our newer listeners of the show, can you give a little bit of your background and what you primarily do as a lawyer extraordinaire?
Yeah, well, I do all things transactional. So I have corporate and real estate law, but so it's everything setting up companies and doing trademarks and securities law and all those kinds of things. But for the last 15 years, I've had a very large niche of clients in the liquor law areas, the breweries, distilleries, wineries, et cetera. And so the post that you're referring to, John, I think is the Facebook post where I made a comment that I'm picking up cannabis clients faster than I did brewery clients 15 years ago, just to give people perspective.
That would be the one.
the interest out there from people wanting to engage in this as a business, and there is a lot of interest. I probably field 1 to 2 calls or emails per day right now.
Based off of the, and it's a big, I mean, it's a pretty big bill. It's like 300 plus pages, right? I'm going to get into a little bit more of this after I talk with you. American Experiment put out a really good piece about the marijuana legalization. We're about to mess around and find out. Curious, though, just in the time that you've had to look over it, have you been able to form sort of an impression, sort of, thumbs up, thumbs down, neutral on what they passed in terms of what you do and, how easy it'll be for individuals to go and run a business based off of the rules that they've put forward?
Well, I mean, in my opinion, it won't be easy. I start from the position, though, that, I recall our late great friend Drew Lee, who said, there's a right way and a wrong way to do this.
Right.
I'm concerned that they're doing it the wrong way. But I do believe that a bad legalization regulation structure is better than prohibition, because we know that didn't work.
Right.
There are pieces of this, I think, that ultimately over time will prove to be unworkable, could be subject to court challenges and refined. And I'm specifically, they've shoved a lot of racial equity provisions into the cannabis legalization structure. There's, you get higher points if you are a social equity applicant in terms of, whether you get a license. And that's one of my biggest issues is this Office of Cannabis Management that they're setting up gets to determine how many licenses in each of these. There's 15 license categories overall, 9 recreational, 4 medical, and 2 what they call low potency, which is the stuff that's out there right now that was legalized last year, the gummies and the Delta 8, the Delta 9, that kind of stuff.
Right.
I'm concerned that this idea that this office is going to be able to dictate how many licenses and then, of course, create a surplus of applicants and then they do this scoring system, and if you meet their social equity criteria, then you get more points than somebody who doesn't. I'm used to the liquor law area where if you qualify, here's the requirements for a license. If you meet them, you get one. And so what I'm doing a lot right now, John, is kind of getting people, kind of making them aware of these requirements and getting them in a position and getting them structured to be able to apply, because there's not going to be any license issued. I think Representative Stevens said it's probably about 18 months. I mean, they have to set up a state agency and come up with application forms and their criteria and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be a while before there's actually people can do this as a business, and that's what that's my job right now, is to do all the, you know, the boring business stuff and work on business plans and security plans and everything else. So
now, this was probably, well, I don't know if this is avoidable or not, but just based off of what you said, talking with a lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, how maybe 18 months until businesses are allowed to start selling this, I'll raise the question, and it's kind of brought up a bit here in this Center of the American Experiment piece, but you're looking at August 1st being the date in which anyone over 21 years of age can possess 2 ounces, a large sandwich bag, of marijuana in public, and up to 2 pounds at home. Adults will be able to grow up to 8 plants in their homes and consume marijuana in their homes or on their property. I chuckle because, so if we're not going to be able to start legally selling it, businesses aren't, but it's going to be legal to individuals on August 1st. I mean, are we not going to, in that period of time, perpetuate the black market? I mean, I'm not asking you as the lawyer. I'm just basically just throwing the question out there, where it seems to me like we're sort of opening up an avenue where a lot of enterprising entrepreneurs are going to start being able to sell weed and not have to worry about reprisal before businesses even get a chance to go and do so.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it's all going to work. I mean, I think, you know, the grow at home piece, I think obviously people that want immediate access to it are going to start growing their own plants that are, you know, the up to the 8 plants under the law. You know, the low potency THC stuff will still be out there. I mean, none of my brewery clients that are doing those THC infused seltzers have any plans to stop them, and I think they can go up until 2025 before they actually have to apply for a license to produce those. So I don't know where it's going to go, but related to the centerpiece and a lot of other Republicans and conservatives that have been criticizing this idea of legalization, this is where I come from. And I come out, except because of the liquor stuff, I come out from understanding what prohibition can do, because that's what happened with liquor. And
sure,
in some respects, we're still dealing with the effects of that in some of the restrictive laws that we have on liquor, particularly in this state. But, you know, just to refresh everybody's memory from the legal perspective, the issue with marijuana is it's on Schedule 1 of the Federal Controlled Substances Act. And a drug that, to be on Schedule 1, there's really two criteria. There is no medical benefit, and it's highly addictive. Well, I've heard stories, there have been studies. I don't think anybody disputes at this point that there is medical benefit to this drug. And that's, to me, as a lawyer, that's the end of the discussion. I mean, all this talk about all these, the job market and the driving while impaired, all those things, yeah, we're going to have to figure that out. But the big issue is, from a legal standpoint, it doesn't belong on Schedule 1. The reason it's there, of course, is because you've got pharmaceutical companies that are writing checks to members of Congress to keep it there. But that to me is the big issue. Again, and you know, this requires personal responsibility, just like any other drug. I mean, you can't drink a bottle of NyQuil and get behind the wheel of an automobile. Bad things are going to happen.
Right. And I want to be clear on my end too. I've been pro the legalization of this as well. Now we're getting into, all right, they legalized it. And this is why we had you on this morning, obviously, just sort of recap. All right, they've legalized it, but let's look at, you know, what are going to be the consequences, you know, intended and unintended, of the way that they've gone and done it. And it seems as if we're going to be navigating these rocky waters for a while. I want to go to the phones. Let's go and talk with Eric. Good morning, Eric. Welcome to Twin Cities News Talk. John Justice, and you're on with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. What's on your mind?
Hi, guys. Here's the thing. A lot of people say that we're giving the black market an 18-month head start here, and I think it's important to look at the way the law is written. We're actually giving the homegrown market an 18-month head start here. Mm. Pretty much where I have a lawyer, and pretty much what we're going to be doing is giving it away, and we're going to be forming what we call supper clubs. Because we're not going to wait 18 months for the Office of Cannabis Management, whoever,
right,
we are, if the law says under adult personal use. Now, the thing is about this law, you can take all of the stuff that applies to businesses and throw it out and just look at what a person can do. A person can give it away, and the law clearly states if you are part of a product or service industry, you cannot give it away. So if I'm an advocacy group, I can give it away and sample it. If I'm a nonprofit, I can give it away and sample it. Now, I just went through this. I actually had a lawyer write an opinion on this. So primarily what we're going to be doing is we're going to be giving it away for membership-driven supper clubs. And that way we open on July 1st. All the August 1st, July 1st, the lawyers I'm dealing with are saying it's July 1st.
Oh, wow.
And that's pretty much it. So I'm kind of just saying I don't, you know, this industry and this bill was put in place to give people the power. And when you actually start to look at what an individual can do, we honestly don't need dispensaries. We don't need anyone else with supper clubs. And Minnesota loves their supper clubs because it's just going to be very difficult. Social equity aside, challenges aside, 18 months wait for the Office of Cannabis Management to figure something out. So we're all just going to be forming supper clubs. And dispensaries, if they're smart, will be changing over to supper clubs.
Eric, I'm going to stop you here. I want to get back to the guest. Thank you for your phone call. Kind of, reiterating what we talked about a moment ago, the potential of the black market, but also those individuals out there that are growing it on their own. I would tend to think, Jeff, and I'm curious to get your opinion based off of what he said, that there's going to be room for both. There's going to be room for individuals to do what Eric are doing, but there's also going to be individuals that are going to be going out and purchasing from other establishments and people that you would potentially be representing, correct?
Yeah, I agree. And to the caller's point, I think the grow at home piece of this could be one of the most powerful pieces of this legislation. You think about what we have now with medical cannabis and being able to have one of the qualified ailments that allows you to get a prescription, and then you have to get the prescription and pay for your medical cannabis. Well, now you're going to be able to grow at home. If you think this helps you, and I've talked to veterans that use this to help with PTSD issues. I've talked to cancer patients who use this to deal with side effects of chemotherapy. You're going to have a lot of people that are able to grow their plants and be able to basically grow their own medication, where now you needed to have the permission of the government. And I think that's a big piece of it. I think there's going to be a market for the dispensaries and there's one of the licenses is they call it the cannabis micro business, which is kind of equivalent to a brewery and tap room. They're going to be able to grow a certain amount of their own stuff and sell it on site. So I think there is going to be those that don't want to take the time to grow their own, but there's going to be the convenience factor that will drive the, you know, how much business that the retailers do. Plus, you know, retail, everybody thinks that this is just as, you know, smoking joints. I mean, this is, John, there's gummies.
Right.
Even with the low potency stuff, I've got a client that is doing like pretzels. There's like food additives. I mean, there's a lot more to it than if you want to, you know, just have flower form. Yeah, you can grow your plants and enjoy it at home. But there's a lot of other ways that people are consuming this stuff, and I think that's where the licensed retailers are going to come into play.
We have some other phone calls we'll get to here in a moment. Also, a talk back we'll get to as well. I wanted to ask you, one of the questions I wanted to ask you before you came on, and you touched upon this briefly when we first started talking with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. What has primarily been with the individuals that have reached out to you for representation or looking for answers to their questions? What are some of the biggest questions that you've received so far? Has there been any surprise? That you've been hearing from those that are looking to get a license to sell marijuana?
I just think it's a lot of folks that are trying to get a handle on what are the requirements. You know, you talk about the 300 and some page bill. One of my ACE law clerks helped me synthesize it down. So I'm just starting to get out to these people, a summary of what all of the requirements are, not only to get the license, but the ongoing reporting requirements. And there's a lot of stuff here. I mean, it's a, it's a regulated industry. It's going to be more heavily regulated, in my opinion, than what alcohol is. And alcohol is probably the most heavily, you know, alcohol and tobacco now are very heavily regulated. So that's just, you know, that's what my job is as a lawyer, is to help them navigate this. And that's just, you know, people come to me and say, I want to do a dispensary. Well, which one? You got about three or four options. which one? You know, so that's kind of what I don't know that everybody knows all the different categories that are going to be available under this.
Let's go and talk with Matt in Maplewood. Good morning, Matt.
Leave it to our state to take the worst implementation as far as anti-freedom. They've done it with tobacco. They've done it with fireworks. They've done it with alcohol. So this is just, you know, nanny state stuff and a giveaway to their cronies. But I agree. I mean, I tend to agree that I think, you know, some legalization in terms of, that direction, that things will work themselves out. And again, there's just a number of loopholes in here that people will exploit. The supper club ideas come up and all that. But it's just disgusting to me that we can't go, for once do the things right the first time and have to go through all these legal battles and everything to get that proper implementation.
What specifically, like, is there something you can point to you specifically would want to see changed or done differently?
Well, I mean, the licensure, I mean, is the big thing here, of course, because I mean, basically they should open it up to basically allow, if you meet the criteria for, you know, as you do with alcohol today, that you should be openly licensed to this stuff without, you know, basically all these gates to, put direct traffic to their preferred cronies, I think is the biggest problem here.
Thanks, Matt. Jeff, can you speak a little bit to that? I know you did a bit before, but just getting back to Matt's frustration over this potentially being, you know, burdensome in terms of the regulations, and you mentioned it as it relates, and he did as well, as it relates to how we handle alcohol. Is this a circumstance where, because it's new, it should be handled this way and they could be lessened in the future? Or perhaps, you know, is this too much of a burden for somebody that wants to go out there and begin to sell recreational marijuana?
I do think, John, I disagree with some of what was put into the bill as criteria and requirements. It's a lot of the Democrats' social agenda in terms of being this, like I said, this scoring system to be able to obtain a license. And I'm not certain that, I mean, look, put it this way. The first person that's denied a license is going to be running into court to challenge some of these things, and we'll see what happens.
Right.
But again, like I said, this is, unfortunately, the other party didn't oppose this when they were in charge of the Senate. And so now with this trifecta, they were able to implement legalization the way they wanted to. And so this is what we have. This is the hand we've been dealt. As I said, I think it's still better than prohibition, but are there warts on it? Absolutely. Are they fixable over time? Absolutely.
Let's go in. We got a talk back via the iHeart radio app. Had a question for you.
If you could ask the attorney, I'm just curious, when people are driving and they're stoned, how is that regulated? To me, that's like really, really scary. And I just like to know, they don't get a DUI. What do they get? Just a handshake, or how does that work?
Yeah, Jeff, are you capable of weighing in on that one?
I'll do my best. I'm not a criminal lawyer.
Right.
But there are driving while impaired laws that whether it be alcohol or cannabis, yeah, if you're impaired, you're impaired. So, you know, there's laws out there. If somebody is driving while stoned, there's consequences for that.
I'm a big fan of the Funyun test. You know, you offer them Funyuns in that way. If they accept,
well,
then you...
My big thing is, you know, there's, again, anytime you're dealing with, same thing with alcohol, right? You know, there's personal responsibility involved here. And, yeah, it's nice that we've legalized it. To the people out there that want to partake in it, don't screw it up.
Yeah.
Don't give the government a reason to
yeah,
walk some of this stuff back.
Let's talk with Matthew. Good morning, Matthew. Well, welcome to Twin Cities News Talk, and you're on with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien.
Good morning, gentlemen. So my comment is kind of twofold, right? So I'm for it. It's done wonders for my wife and anxiety and depression. It's phenomenal. So I think it's great medicinal-wise, right? I think there's potentially a problem with it being used recreational. I think you open up a new avenue. But with that being said, both points being brought up, even in the Bible, it says in Genesis 1:12, I give you all the seed-bearing plants and herbs to use. So I think it's important that it's out there, and I think it's going to have a lot of medicinal benefits. We just got to educate on it, just like we do alcohol and tobacco.
Thank you for the call, Matthew. Jeff O'Brien, you want to quote any scripture, or are you good?
Well, no, what I would refer to, though, is if you from the bill signing ceremony a couple of days ago, former Governor Ventura, and this is a point that he referenced in his book, and if anybody hasn't read, he has a book called Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto, and it is a very good read, and it kind of goes through the history of why this drug ended up on Schedule I and why it shouldn't have in the first place, and some of the kind of the stereotyping that has been done about this drug. It's a very good read, but Jesse even said, that we're no longer going to be prohibiting the use of a plant that was put here by God.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's so the caller is kind of echoing what our former governor said on Tuesday. You know, there's a lot of credit to go around, but I will say I'll give a special shout out to Governor Ventura, because I think 20 years ago when he was governor, he might have been the first elected official to ever speak out in favor of legalizing it.
Well, so, he certainly pointed that out during the press conference, but he took his own victory lap.
Yeah, well, hey, give credit where credit's due. Jesse was ahead of everybody else on this.
Hey, Jeff, if there's anybody listening who would like to talk to you about your services, you want to point anybody in a particular direction?
Yeah, you can reach out to me, email joBryan@cclawmn.com. You can find me on Twitter, find me on Facebook, find me on LinkedIn. You can call the office, 612-336-1298. At this point, I'm happy to field whatever questions anybody has, and we'll go from there. One last thing, John. I know we've been talking about the ATF notice about the marijuana possession. I will say there's already been two court challenges, and this is a Biden DOJ rule that they've been enforcing. It's been shot down by two federal courts, and so at some point there's going to be more federal courts shooting it down. No pun intended. But this idea that you can't you can't possess a firearm if you are if you have cannabis, that rule is not holding up when it comes to a judicial challenge. And I hope ultimately, speaking of judicial challenges, I would hope that the attorneys general in the states that have allowed medical get their act together and maybe go sue the federal government to get it off of Schedule 1, because they're not going to ever take it off voluntarily.
Jeff, thanks for the extended time of this morning, man. That was great stuff. I really appreciate it, and I'll talk to you soon. All right.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, John.